Okay, so I just got back from San Diego, right?
Fantastic. How was it?
It was beautiful. We had a great time, including what is simultaneously one of the best and one of the worst concert-going experiences I've ever had.
Uh-oh. Who'd you go see?
Hozier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which, like, I was not super familiar with his music. My fiancé has played a fair amount of it in the car, but, like, I'm not a big fan of his, or I wasn't before the concert. Actual show, great. I think I'm a Hozier fan now.
Wow.
Really good music, especially played live. Also, he gave a really good political speech during his encore in ways that are aligned with a lot of things that I believe in, like the power of mass action and drawing comparisons between, say, certain geopolitical conditions and the Irish struggle for liberation.
Yeah, he's very Irish.
Yes, very Irish.
The Irish tend to be really, well, they've gone through a lot. And have a lot of opinions.
They don't like it when people are occupied.
Yeah,
the
no.
Thing.
They certainly don't.
Uh-huh.
They're not into that.
So that bit was great. The bit where we listened to the music and saw him perform and stuff, super cool. What wasn't cool was all of the concert etiquette, which is...
Oh, just other people?
Yeah.
Just of course.
The worst that I have ever seen. Because we were up on, like, it's this big amphitheater, right? And the front rows are all like regular seating, and then the back half is all this big stadium shaped lawn, right? So it's like a big grassy lawn. We're on the lawn.
The San Diego Amphitheater.
Yes, the North Island something amphitheater. And so we get there like an hour early because we want to get good spots, right? Like we're like they're an hour before the opener.
Nice. Who was the opener?
Some other act who I think she was like a friend of his, but also like her music wasn't nearly as good. And, sorry if she's listening, but
holy shit,
did not make much of an impression. Anyway, we get there an hour early and, we managed to be like probably some of the first couple hundred people through the gates, meaning that we actually get really good spots on the lawn. Like we're on the lawn, we're maybe like two or three rows of people back, but like we're close to the front. We can see the stage super, super closely.
You need a lawn.
So we lay out our blanket and we lay out our towels because there's six of us. It's like a good amount of space, but like reasonably compact as lawn shows go. And we're all set up and everything looks great. And then the couple sitting in front of us, the guy leaves, and he comes back with a couple of folding chairs he rented and sets them up directly in front of us and completely cuts off our view of the stage.
Okay.
So then we...
Did you clip his hamstrings?
I was so steamed about this for like 45 minutes. Like, it almost...
Yeah, that sucks.
We're just getting started. I was pretty steamed about that, so I ended up like going to get food, which like $24 grilled cheese. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean,
that's your fault.
It's show food, I know, but I needed something to do, so I went and left. And while I was gone, we moved everything over to get a little bit to the side of them so we could see the stage better, right? And then as stuff started filling in and the show started like getting ready, like the openers up there and stuff like that, things that happen in no particular order. One. A couple sets down their towel basically directly on the edge of our blanket, zero gap in between. And then they sit kind of like, you know, nestled together and basically begin getting handsy and making out and going about as far as you can go before it becomes public sex, right next to our blanket.
Hell yeah.
Two.
Did you offer to join in?
Well, at one point they just started like they leaned back and they were leaning against Lizzie's leg and she was like, I'm very sorry. Could you please move? And the guy looked miffed and it was like, you're making contact with our space. I'm sorry, but what?
Yeah, I don't know. You can't be demure in San Diego.
Yeah.
That's not the attitude to have. Not that it's Lizzie's fault, but.
But like, and then like when one of our people stood up to like go get some water or went to the bathroom or something, then some other people came by and like picked up her towel and were making like they were going to sit there. And we had to be like, no, this spot is occupied. Someone is coming back for this. And then when the actual show started, we're all set out comfy on our blankets. And then everyone fucking stands up.
Yeah, of course.
What? It's a lawn show. You sit on the whole point is that you can sit on the blanket and watch the music in relaxation.
No, you gotta get up and dance.
Okay, maybe you would have handled it differently, but yeah. I at this point was quite annoyed by like the people just crowding in.
I would have clipped the guy's hamstrings. I would have joined in on the makeout session, and then I would have been like, "All right, it's time to stand." Like I understand the expectations, it sounds like you had a good time anyway.
We had a good time anyway. I just. My back hurt a lot that day, and I did not enjoy standing on my feet for the whole show when I thought I was going to sit on a nice comfy blanket on the lawn.
Do you remember, you need a lawn?
A little, what?
It was this old you.
This sounds familiar.
This was, I don't remember if it started on YTMND.
That sounds
right. But
it
certainly existed there. It was this, hold on, I'm going to try and like.
I need the audience to weigh in, by the way. We need opinions on who is more correct in this situation.
Oh, no, it's probably you. Like, I'm not saying I'm right, but I think I would have. Oh, you have to like, it doesn't just like blast YTMNDs anymore. You have to click play. What's the point?
Well,
the point was that you would shock people with weird Rick Astley things.
The internet doesn't work that way anymore.
Anyway, I have to actually, I'm going to switch this to so that the output is actually, we can actually pick it up on our microphones so that everyone can listen in. This is youneedalawn.ytmnd.com. It does have a slur in it, but I'm pretty sure it's the slur that I can say. So it's probably fine.
Okay. Great.
I'm probably just going to have to turn off one of our mics during editing. But this is the You Need a Lawn by YTMND. Wear a new thing, anything, just to believe you were hiding an evil dart. Beautiful mar. Oh, it's mind? We wear a new thing. Are you?
What did you think?
I couldn't. Sage, are you dumb? You need a law. I couldn't. So that's basically
what's
that.
What's fucking Sonic R-ass music? What is this, from the Sega Saturn? What is this?
So I was listening to your story actively, but I also had that going in the back of my head the entire time. And I just wanted you to know that.
I appreciate the context.
That took forever to get there.
Should we talk about Pokemon?
I suppose so. We skip school and go beat up on gang members that are also skipping school for skipping school and make a shitty sandwich. Jesus Christ.
Bus, storm of bus, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
It's Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. That's what we're talking about today.
We sure
Hi,
are.
Hi, everyone. I'm back. Welcome to Storm Buds.
You're sounding much better.
I exist in the context of everything again. I was out for a good week and a half because of good old COVID. Good old COVID, good old pneumonia. Not fun. Not fun. Hey, I don't know if you've heard. Have you heard? COVID?
Not good.
Not good. COVID might even say bad. COVID, bad. Bad, bad, bad. COVID, bad, bad.
I recorded that Nancy Drew episode and like 6 hours later was like, fuck, I could make it so much better in like four different ways, but I have to fly to San Diego in 6 hours.
Yeah, it was a difficult decision to have to just like skip Nancy Drew for me. But I genuinely, I was so delirious and pained. I could not deal with the perspective of the Nancy Drew game. I couldn't.
You were having trouble sleeping.
I could not sleep. Yeah. And I just couldn't. I couldn't grok what was going on. I was like, I can't do this. I did, however, keep up with our long play for the most part, Final Fantasy VIII, just because I'm so familiar with that game that I really didn't need to be lucid to continue grinding it. We'll talk about Final Fantasy VIII in the second half of our episode, but I am here to, and so is Alex, here to talk about Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Also worth mentioning, I am your host of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I'm joined by my co-host of light, Alexander Hambrock.
Hello, everyone.
Woohoo! I didn't have to tell you to say hello this time. Finally, you've caught on.
I thought it was like a fun bit we did. I thought that was like, I thought you liked telling
no,
me.
No, I like that better. That's good. That's good energy. I'm glad you're here and present and in my house and not catching COVID, even though, my God, I exposed you to it. Oh man, did we ever? We went to Taste of Greek Town and we shared food and then we played board games. And then I was like, I have a bit of a dry cough. Hey, everyone, get out of my house. Get out of my house right now.
in hindsight, none of us were being particularly cautious. I don't think you were to blame for any of that other than you were the one who got the bad dice roll.
Oh yeah, I definitely got the bad dice roll. Okay, I have to stop talking about it because it's probably sickening and triggering, but I'm better now. There might be a little bit of coughing, a lingering cough, and a bit of brain fog. Ooh, can't wait to deal with that over the next 3 to 9 months.
Oh, boy.
Can't wait. Well, that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about Pokemon Scarlet Violet. As I've said, what, 3 times now? This is the latest in the mainline entry of Pokemon games. You guys know Mix Pokemon is a Pokemon company owned by Nintendo. Game Freak. Yeah.
Not much history needed here other than that, like, this is a big reinvention after Pokemon Arceus or whatever.
Yeah, I guess it did come out after Arceus, didn't it? Arceus, who cares? Arceus was really...
Arceus.
Arceus was really, really excellent. I really liked it. I had a great time playing that. Pokemon Scarlet Violet is pretty good in comparison.
I played much less of it than you.
Yeah.
But my impression is also pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It seems more ambitious than it can execute on.
Yeah, we're going to say this once at the top of the episode, and then we're going to only maybe refer to it. Runs like shit and looks like shit.
Yep.
That's been said.
No, because here's the thing.
It's been said to death.
Aesthetically, I quite like it. I think the visual design of stuff is an interesting way to scale all this stuff up.
I think at a micro level, it's good. I think the characters are cute, the animations are cute. The world itself is a little flat, but whatever. Yeah. Anyway, that's been done to death. Just note that there's always an asterisk of, like, hey, if when you're doing something, it's going to be a lot slower than it should be. But there's still some things that are enjoyable. The main thing about this game, there's a lot of... So it takes place in an Iberia-like the universe of Paldea, an island of Paldea in Pokemon. And if you're not familiar with what Iberia means, it is the kind of peninsula of Spain and Portugal. Basically, that it's very, really cool. I spent 4 months living in Spain. I was really excited for this.
Think this is accurate to life?
No, God, not at all. Not in the slightest. No, it's very much not. I don't really understand even the ways in which it does. I mean, the olives are accurate. There's olives everywhere. That's pretty accurate. And things are just sort of generally orange.
Sure.
They got that right. One of the things that I think they tried to get inspired from is a major factor of this is sandwiches. I was hoping for it to be school, because this is, of course, back to school month. Turns out that was a facade.
Yeah.
This is more about sandwiches than school.
You seem done with the school stuff pretty quick.
The school stuff is entirely optional and skipped over.
I went to a math class to see, like, oh, what's math class like?
Same. I went to the math class, too.
And
she was
like,
nothing.
Did you know that in Pokemon battles, if an attack is super effective, it does 2x damage? 2x. That's multiplication. And I was like, okay, I'm 10. I think I understand how 2x works at this point. Also at the school, you're like your friendly rival lady who likes helping you out with everything, right?
Oh, yeah, Nimona.
Yeah, Nimona. I thought she was like an upperclassman, but she's in my classroom when I first...
I think it's a mixed age group.
It's gotta be, because she's like at least 15.
Yeah, no, I mean, she's a champion. She's already done this, but every school year, I guess...
She's also like a foot taller than me.
So the premise of this is you've apparently just moved to this place. You go to the school to learn how to Pokemon battle. This is the only place in the entire universe that has a school entirely dedicated to this. Get to school, you get boarded up, basically, and then the year immediately skips by, and what happens is you are then given an independent study. Everyone in this school is just given independent study, and they have to go find their treasure, whatever that means. I'll tell you what it means. Absolutely nothing.
Just go out
and fuck around and find out.
Also, you get your dorm room as a 10-year-old, has a full kitchen. I was like,
yeah,
what
the fuck? That is a kitted out dorm room. That kid's going to make Easy Mac so good, but he's going to have with all the fixings.
Well, if he ever sleeps there. But
that's true. You could just go out at all hours of the night and never get tired or anything, because that's not what this game's about. This game's about catching Pokemon. And boy, are the Pokemon in this game are good.
It's a good selection.
There's a good selection of Pokemon apart from the starters. I'm not a fan of the starters.
I'm not a huge fan of it either. I went with Fuecoco.
That makes sense. I went with Sprigatito, though. Because I'm a grass stan.
I normally go for grass type, but you picked grass first, and I was like, I don't like...
That's true. We do want to make sure that we could trade locally at some point.
I don't like the Quackaval.
I don't like...
The weird flamenco dancer. It's...
I don't know.
His proportions are unnerving to me.
Yeah, it's and we're not Quackaval stans, which is probably heresy because it is a very flamboyant Pokemon. But I prefer Meowscarada. But then I put it in the box because I went and got the DLC.
Yes. And what's the first thing you got?
Oh, I got my son. I have my tray full of my sons here. My sons, Bellsprout, Weepinbell and Victreebel. I went immediately got it and I was like, yes, this is awesome. And then I actually kept playing a bit of the DLC and I was like, hey, this is actually better than the base game and I'm going to come back to this.
Well, okay, so why don't you read me your party right now? Who do you have with you?
My party, right. Can we take a step back? Because I wasn't done explaining the premise. You go on your treasure hunt and there's basically three storylines to do. You get pulled in three different directions. One is you must go find herbs to make sandwiches with Arvin, the Mullitude dude who is the son of whichever Pokemon professor you have. The one direction is you go with Nimona to challenge the Pokemon gyms and become the champion. And the third direction is that there is this team, the Team Rocket of this game is Team Star. They are being very delinquent and you are in cahoots with a mysterious person named Cassiopeia, who is definitely not the shy girl that talks to you every time just before Cassiopeia calls you. And also the director who's got a really good disguise, and it goes by the name of Clive. I can't help but love him.
And the way this works basically is each of those represent a set of icons on your open world map, right?
Yeah, and you just kind of go and fuck around, and the open world does not scale, so there is like a set order in which you should probably be doing things.
I was curious about that. Okay.
It's really stupid. It should scale. It should just do the Final Fantasy VIII thing and scale, even if it's like whatever. It scales to whatever's in your party. They have the resources to do that. If it's a little bit of lazy important. Or the gym leaders at least.
Give each gym leader like three or four different like sets based on what level you're at. Like, oh, sure, here's the set for if you're level 12. Here's the set if you're level 25.
Yeah, something. Just anything. But whatever. So that being said, I'm not fully done with the game. I want to clarify. I'm like, three Team Star battles in. I think I have four badges, and I've gotten like four of the herbs. And to get the herbs, you fight those giant Pokemon gimmicky battles that are kind of funny. So right now I have this. Let's see. What's this called? Check summary. Does the summary tell me what? Okay. So I have a Garganacle, which is the rock... The fully evolved form of the little rock mushroom.
The salt thing.
The salt thing, yeah. And I've named it Man Tip. I have a my shiny, the one shiny I found. I have a shiny Corviknight. I named him Tweef. T-W-E-E-F. I have a Sandaconda, who I have not nicknamed yet. This one's just Sandaconda. I have not thought of a nickname yet. But I picked that up semi-recently because I was like, hey, my Chinese Zodiac is an Earth Snake. I should probably just have this. That one's good. I have, of course, my son, who is currently a Weepinbell. I've not found a Leafstone yet. Currently a Weepinbell named Human Teen. She's not a human adult yet, but past the human child stage. I have a Char cadet named Chester.
Nice.
So I got the exclamation point in there. And I have a Palmo who's not fully evolved yet, but a Palmo named Pleek. That's my team. I think I got everyone. Yeah, so that's six. How about yourself?
I am not nearly as far as you because I've had an insane couple of weeks. So I have, let's see here, I've got the Crocolore, that's the second form of Hookah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got, his name is Frankie.
Okay.
I have a Psyduck named Greg.
Good.
I have a Mareep named Ampere.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a, what's the Doe dog?
Oh, Fido.
Fido. I've got a Fido named Ginger after our dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got
I've got a
Hoppip, which I have not named yet.
Oh, yes. I was tempted to include Jumpluff in my team, but I was like, I really don't need that much grass, do I?
And, what's the last one I've got? Oh, and I've got a Diglett, who does not have a nickname yet.
Great. Those are all pretty. Like, you got a good selection of early Mons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, like Hoppip and Psyduck both. I was like, you know, I've never actually played a game through with these, or at least used them heavily. So, like, yeah. I'm going to grab like a Psyduck and a Hoppip, and I'm going to let's like take them a little ways and see what they're actually like to use throughout the game, which is cool.
I try to use as many Pokemon that are new to me as possible. I again skipped Sword and Shield, so a lot of the Sword and Shield stuff is new to me. I think. Some of like the way that the battling works and the auto battling stuff was actually done in Sword and Shield, and Sword and Shield also introduced raids, but the Terra system is interesting.
The new Terra system
is interesting, and I kind of like it. I like that when you do the raids, you get the EXP crystals, and you can use those on whatever Pokemon you want. And that's just really nice for completing the whole dex. I might complete the whole dex this time. I don't know. It's not bad. I'm not having a bad time at all. Except for. Have you gone to any of the gyms yet?
Yes, I did the first gym.
Was it the bug gym? Fuck that shit! Oh, man! That was awful!
You did not enjoy rolling the olive?
Rolling is a generous term for it. What would happen is I would approach the olive, and then it would glitch, teleport behind me, nothing personnel kid, and then get knocked backwards out of the arena, and I'd have to start all over six times.
Oh my God.
This shit was awful. It was awful.
Beyond just frame rate issues, I have seen a couple of glitches. I have had some NPCs walk through each other.
It's not good. It's not good. It's not clean. It referred to the beginning of the episode as to maybe why. but yeah, it's otherwise the performance doesn't bother me too much. I like the idea of the open world. I like the feeling I get every time I see a clump of Tauroses, and I'm like, hell yes, time to farm these for a good chunk of EXP. You know, I like the feeling of sort of like, ooh, the feeling of scale when I'm approaching that giant fucking iron treads in the desert that you haven't seen yet. That shit's scary. Nope. Have you done any of the Titan stuff? No.
No, I've done some Titan stuff yet.
There's one Pokemon that I really fucking hate. It's gross as fuck. What it's called like Bombardier or something. Let me show it to you. Let me just check my box. Mm-hmm. It's fucking gross. It's fucking disgusting. It's got this nasty skin flap. It's the skin flap bird. Here it is. Bombardier. Look at it. It's got... Here, grab that. It's like holding... It's like a stork bird, but it's holding up its stork pouch with the skin flap. And then it like drops it on the ground sometimes, and then it clicks it up with its beak, and it's like... And it like makes a gross mouth noise.
Yeah, I hate that.
I hate that thing. And it's one of the giant ones. And I was like, no, it was gross. It's like it drops just roly-poly shits. It just drops turds down a fucking hillside. And you have to drop. Watch as it lowers its skin flap and drops skin flap turds down you. It's disgusting. That's the only Pokemon I hate. The other Pokemon that I've new Pokemon that I have a negative opinion about is, of course, Flamigo, because it's just a flamingo without an N.
Yeah, the naming convention on a few of these. I mean,
Amigo is clever, but they could have done literally anything with it. I don't know.
Knackle
that one's
just
not good,
the formula for salt.
Yeah, but Knackle is great. Knackle is iconic. And it's like so cute and different.
It is very cute and very different.
It's not just a flamingo. Oh, anyway. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. The Gimme Ghoul. I like Gimme Ghoul a lot, too. The treasure chest.
Yeah.
The one that evolves into Golden Go once you get 1,000 gold coins. Uh-huh. So stupid. I love it. I love that. It's great. I'm having a great time. I'll probably finish it at some point.
Should we talk about our Pokemon that we get to ride?
Oh, yeah. And then also there's this subplot of the legendary Pokemon you get that you get to ride. I choose Violet, so I got Maridon, the sleek boy, and you got Coridon. And either way, they both really love those sandwiches.
They love sandwiches. I was not paying much attention to like the pre-release material or whatever. I was under the impression that the reason their bodies look like they have giant wheels is because they would turn into wheels and you'd ride them like a motorcycle.
Mine does. But,
yours does?
Yes.
Mine just runs around.
Coridon sucks.
Mine just runs around on his little
legs. I think it's stupid. I don't like Coridon one bit. I'm kind of a Coridon hater.
Man, so you picked...
Yeah, let me show you.
Violet? You get the one that you can ride like a motorbike?
Well, yeah, look at this. I'm like, woo! It also looks like a big cock. Oh, shit, I ran into something. That's another thing. Like, you can't tell when you're about to run into things because things do not load in time. Whatever, I'll just run. I'll just go to a town quick. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you get to ride around on it. And then, like, when you eventually, as you beat more of the Titan Pokemon, you get more abilities. So I get to, like, jump higher, and you can, like, glide and shit, and it's got cool wings.
Man, like,
Rhydon rules, dude.
Man, Rhydon just like just runs on his legs.
Yeah.
Like,
well, no, I have a cool, I got a sick motorcycle Pokemon.
I'd be fine with if he didn't have big ass wheels right there.
Yeah, that's a little weird. That's weird. I can't believe they did that for Scarlet.
Whatever. Anyway,
well,
okay.
maybe there'll be like a cool. Maybe he'll have like cool flappy wings instead when you unlock flying
cool.
on him. I don't know. There could be something. There could be some redeeming qualities. Keep playing.
I will say also, playing this interleaved with playing Final Fantasy VIII.
That's honestly been a fucking treat for me.
It's a real. Well, the thing that it really stands out to me is that Final Fantasy VIII has a really large, complex, sprawling story and is extremely economical with spoken dialogue, whereas this game has no story whatsoever and nobody shuts up.
I was just playing before here. I was like, oh, I'll just do the star encounter I'm on. I'll finish that and then we'll get going. And my God, I was like, God, these people don't shut up. I'm sorry. Like, we could have started this 20 minutes ago.
This is a non-insignificant part of why I have a hard time with a lot of modern JRPGs, I think. Like, I feel like modern JRPGs just have so much dialogue.
Yeah, they do tend to repeat themselves to make sure that nobody misses anything. And that's fine. I appreciate the accessibility of this game. But no, I'm having otherwise a good time. Excited to keep playing it. Excited to play the DLCs. Excited to probably go back to Sword and Shield and be like, oh, this actually is a good Pokemon game. That I'm
yeah,
also enjoying, like, I'm curious to see, like, because I don't know, like, I know that Sword and Shield invented or innovated in a lot of really cool ways that probably Violet is borrowing from, and I'm giving too much credit to Violet where it should go to Sword and Shield, but, like, whatever. That's my perspective, and I'm enjoying it.
I want to play Sword and Shield so I can get the Weezing with the giant, like, smokestack top hat.
We could probably get this in here. I don't have Nintendo online because that's a racket. So we will have to trade locally at some point.
We'll figure it out. Yeah.
If I want to complete the decks, which I do. Maybe we'll get, and then Lizzie can get Violet as well. And she'll be like, man, this version's way better. Plus, I got the hot dude professor. That's another disappointment. I wish this hot dude professor was more active with us early on.
Mm-hmm.
So far, all he's done is just call and say, hey, there is a Titan nearby. Please, tighten it. I don't know. Whatever. Make a sandwich and make Maridon stronger. All right, bye. I know he has an active role later, but...
This game does have a lot of really cool character designs.
I
am very into a lot of these sort of secondary characters we see around.
I think my favorite character so far in the game is the headmaster. He's ridiculous and great. That's enough. We talked about this for 25 minutes. This, by the way, was suggested to us by people in our Discord. Thank you so much for having done that and cluing us in to that. Are you going to keep playing this?
I want to say yes, but you know,
we have other games
say?
To play. Yeah, things happen. I mean, you know, Deadlock's coming out too.
On the other hand, I also have a week of work travel coming up next week. So
who knows? Well, it's either the Switch or the Steam Deck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a fun. How do you enjoy traveling with the Steam Deck? Don't you have to like connect online to your Steam account?
No, not at all. You can play it offline just fine.
Okay. I heard complaints that you had to be online.
It's like, it's bulkier than a Switch, certainly. But like, if I've got room for that in my backpack, like, it's fine otherwise.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah. Okie dokie. Well, we're going to, of course, take our customary break for an ad. I am going to see how many improv comedians it takes to switch a light bulb. And I'll report back with my findings after the break.
Have we not done this one?
We're gonna read some ads.
Jerome?
Uh-oh.
Are you happy with your backbone installation?
You know, I always get a weird feeling when you say my name like that, and it's starting to be justified. To answer your question, no, not one bit.
Really? So like, you know, have you found that, like, the backbone just has not kept up with modern gaming?
That's exactly what I found. I found that when I tried to play Backbone when I was playing Final Fantasy 16 that just came out on a PC, when, you know, Clive gets branded, I wasn't really feeling the burn as much as I used to.
What if I told you could upgrade to a Backbone Pro?
Oh my gosh, a Backbone Pro.
Backbone Pro.
Wow, how much would that cost me?
Oh, $12,540.
Oh, okay. That's a completely reasonable sum for a high-end gaming PC machine. Is that what we call it, a machine?
Yeah, a peripheral.
An implant.
A computing device, yeah. You know, it's only 30% higher than the standard Backbone.
Yeah, no, that's completely reasonable. And does it perform 30% as well?
Well, so check this out. So I've got some video footage to check this out here.
Oh, okay.
On the left is someone running on a regular Backbone.
Just checking, this isn't a snuff film, right?
No, it's a gaming performance film.
Okay, great.
Look at this person on the left here. See them playing Overwatch?
You know, I've been burned before. Okay, Overwatch.
Now, the Backbone is augmenting their reflexes as it's supposed to do, right?
Oh.
See? Average response time is about 18 milliseconds. Extremely impressive.
So they're playing Mercy, and boy, is that Backbone arching.
It really is contorting their body to make it look like Mercy's figure. They look in pain, actually. Maybe the human body
They're just being bent over by Pharah. I don't remember this part of Overwatch. I thought, is this?
Okay,
is
we're going to cut the second clip here.
Okay.
So in the second clip, you can see them taking the same kind of shot and engaging in the same erotic roleplay, but now the response times are down to only 13 milliseconds.
Oh my gosh.
That's a 5 millisecond improvement.
Wow, they're playing Final Fantasy 14 and doing erotic roleplay.
And the Backbone is putting them in the middle of all of it, but the Backbone Pro is doing it at a slightly faster degree in ways that are definitely perceptible if you look really closely and really worth the upgrade.
Did not know Grahatia's model was capable of such an upside down performance. This is interesting.
You know, is this on like a private server? Has this been modded?
I think this is just how Balmung is.
Okay. We have another comparison video here.
Okay.
Here is someone playing Tetris with the Backbone.
Oh, okay. This is completely normal. They are looking a little kind of upright as this four block piece is coming down.
Yeah, it feels like every block hits directly.
Oh god. Oh god. No, that the T block. Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
That's
a little,
okay. God damn it!
Okay, but
no, not the square block. Oh Jesus Christ!
Look at the
crunching
stats here.
Is so bad.
Look at the stats here, though. The player on the left with the Backbone regular has a high score of 1,520,000 points.
Okay.
The player on the right has a high score of 1,600,015 points.
Oh,
okay,
Jesus,
like the performance improvement is dramatic.
Oh God! You didn't tell me this was Tetris Ultra. It's going so fast. This poor person is switching blocks. Block shapes. Oh, you told me this wasn't a snuff film.
Okay, we're turning this one off now.
You lied.
I'm not sure how this one ends, so we're going to cut it before we get to anything we don't want to see.
I appreciate that.
Okay, anyway, point being, for an approximate $4,000 upgrade over the Backbone regular, the Backbone Pro just speaks for itself. It is, by and large, the hardware upgrade that you need to improve your gaming performance.
Yeah, well, I'm sold.
You're sold?
I've already bought one.
This is not an upgrade to the existing Backbone. You will need to get the existing one surgically removed, and then you'll have the new one implanted into an entirely new set of spinal connection points.
That's what I said. I bought one.
Well, now you're going to buy a second one.
I bought one.
And it can sit right next to your first one on the shelf.
Yes.
And you can feel very good about your purchase decision.
It's a collector's item. It's not coming out of the box.
And you can tell yourself that you'll sell it on eBay to make up some of the money that you just spent. But let's be honest, you know you won't.
It's going to be my engagement backbone. Part of my dowry.
Well, if you go to backbone.com/pro/stormbuds and enter promo code stormbuds, you can get 15% off that new updated price of $12,540.
Well, you can be like me if you don't want to use the Backbone, you can put it as part of your dowry. Yes, so go to that site and enter that promo code, and we'll definitely get all the kickback. Right?
Honestly, Backbone is one of our most lucrative advertisers. Like, just like
thousands of dollars of kickback from each. Please go.
Like, the three Backbones that we have sold have paid more than, like, the, I think, like, 120.
Yeah, those took care of my student loans on their own. Yeah, I know. That was good. Uh-huh. That's good. I'm debt free now. Thank you. Thanks, Backbone.
Thank you to everyone who's bought a Backbone from us. Also, condolences to the family of Jeremy.
That was Jeremy? The Jeremy? I didn't even notice. Fuck. I don't know what I'm going to do with my Thursday podcast walks now. Fuck. God damn it. I really liked Friend Walker. All right. Well, believe it or not, we're back. Man, those improv comedians, they really struggled with that light bulb. They kept saying they were doing it, but they weren't actually putting it in. And then they kept going on tangents about unrelated topics. I think there was a segment about the missing flight to Malaysia.
One guy was pretending he was on the moon, which was
just absolutely no timely references whatsoever. I feel like this troupe was kind of stuck in a rut. There was one, like, you know when an improv scene kind of starts, I tried to tell them to screw this thing. And then there's this one guy that goes off to the side and starts, like, cranking something.
Okay. The guy who kept reaching into the box of light bulbs and acting like he was picking up cactuses instead was pretty good.
Oh, you liked that? All right.
How I don't know. It? For good physical comedy. He sold being stung by a cactus over and over.
He did sell pain. I guess I got pain, or maybe I just felt pain from watching him. Well, that experiment was, I think, a success. I wanted to see how many could do it. We got 20 and still couldn't, but, like, you know, we learned a lot, even if we didn't actually get the light bulb screwed in. I just ended up having to do it myself anyway. So that didn't work. Well, yeah, it both worked and didn't. You know, it was a learning experience. Speaking of a learning experience, we're going to talk about what we learned playing through Disc 2 of Final Fantasy VIII. And oh boy, is it a lot. Hey, we're already at 40 minutes in this episode. We were going to talk about just the first half of Disc 2. And then one of us got that no good, not good sickness. And so we had to just sit on our thoughts and feelings for quite some time. And now for the next two episodes in a row, we're just going to be talking about one disc and then two entire discs.
Now, stay with me, folks. We're going to try and move pretty quick. Are we actually? Probably not.
No, this is going to be a 90-minute episode, and then the next one's going to be 120, and that's just what we did. That's just what I chose for us. It's my fault. Well, we're going to start. We did end up dipping into disc two a little bit, thankfully, talking about the Laguna sequence beforehand,
I think actually gave us a really natural breaking point, because I think that opening on this prison break is very cool.
And then we wake up in prison. Once we get we are without Squall and Irvine and Renoa, so it's just the three seeds in the prison. They wake up. Zell's like, "Hey, I know this prison because I think Ward worked here."
Yeah.
That's not useful. Mm-hmm. That's not useful, but I'm glad I said it. It's like, what do you mean it's not useful? Anyway.
We're in a prison for Galbadian political dissidents. Also,
yes.
I think Renoa is here.
Oh, yeah. Renoa is here at first. Because the guards come in and then beat the shit out of Zell. They're like, "Where's Renoa? Kick. Tell us where Renoa is. Kick, kick, kick,
they
kick.
Say, is there a Renoa here?" And she's like, "I'm Renoa." It's like, oh, my God, she's so bad at this.
Yeah. Well, fuck it. Yeah, she's... she's the daughter of the Galbadian army general. She knows she's fine. And she's getting pulled out of the prison cell. And before they kick Zell six more times, and they back off, and we initiate a little bit of a prison break sequence.
Cypher also removes Squall from this.
Oh, Squall is in his own special cell down below.
Yeah, because Cypher does this weird... Did I interpret this correctly? Cypher does this weird thing where he grabs Squall and has him stand up and then presses down the top of his head to make him shorter than him.
I don't know. That sounds right.
It was like this weird humiliating power play.
Yeah, it's weird.
Sure what I was
it's
seeing.
Odd. It's an odd thing. And then, of course, he throws him against the wall. That's cool.
Yeah, but we get this weird bit here where, like, Cypher is torturing Squall for information.
On a crucifix.
And he's demanding Squall tell him what a seed is and what gardens are. And, like, which means, like, whatever is going on, it makes it sound like
hey, those are really good questions. I think you asked those questions.
I did too, but I was not raised to be a seed. Like, does Cypher not have access to his old memories, or what's going on?
Does he not? I don't know. That's weird. Anyway, Squall also doesn't know.
He says, like, "My childhood dream has been fulfilled. I've become a sorceress's knight." And it's like, that wasn't your childhood dream previously. You told us about it before. There were no sorceresses involved.
No, he said it was his romantic dream. He said, "Wait till I tell you about it." And then now it's like, "Hey, cool. This was it. This was, no, this, that tracks. That tracks up. That was his dream. He wants to, it wants to be a knight for a lady with magic powers.
Anyway, they also then launch a missile attack on the garden we came from. Which one's that again?
The Balam Garden. They say they're planning to, but we do the prison break sequence. Zell fakes a sickness. They go and get their weapons. Big and Wedge come in. They're like, hey, we're gonna beat these kids up now that they're harmless and they don't have weapons. And then Questus is like, whip. And then we eventually eventually make it to the top, and who should show up to try and rescue us? Way too late.
I know, it's great.
It's so fucking funny. It's Irvine. Everyone's like, I'm here to save the day. And Renault's like, not until I forced you to come back, asshole. And then he's like, whatever, I came back eventually. And she's like, fuck you, and kicks him down the stairs.
It's at this point that I wanna call out that, like, this entire plan has really gone the absolute worst that it could have. As a small group of politically unaffiliated mercenaries, we attempted to assassinate the new leader of an expansionist empire, and when we failed at assassinating her during her inauguration, she decided in all of her megalomania that she would turn the entire destructive capacity of this empire towards eradicating our entire order and our home base. Good job, Cid.
Cid, this Cid sucks. This is the worst Cid, one of the worst Cids in the franchise, if not the worst one.
Honestly, extremely cool opinion.
He is so incompetent. Yes, he has endangered the lives of everyone on that island and other islands and other, like, semi-associated gardens.
His role in this is only going to get more confusing.
Oh, well, we can't dwell too much on it now because we're going to dwell on it later. Anyway,
we do the prison break, which involves running down all these goddamn circular hallways.
So boring. It's so boring. I was like, you know what? I'm turning the encounters off. This sucks. Literally just running in circles 12 times.
Turns out the prison's this weird giant drill complex in the middle of, like, the desert.
Yeah, pretty much. And then we, long story short, we get out with some cool action sequences, and then where you, like, Squall is, like, running across a bridge too slowly, as Squall likes to do. I don't know. He likes to take his time. Then he has to, like, pointlessly crawl along the edge. I thought I died during that. I was like, what the hell?
First time.
I was like, no, but I didn't die. I just thought I did because I couldn't tell where the end was. But he was fine. Anyway, now we split up the party. Hooray.
One of them is going to stop the missiles from firing on the
Selfie's
Pravia
going to lead the missile charge, and Squall's going to lead the Balam Garden reconnaissance party. Selfie, this is a great time to level up people without Squall on your party if you have any imbalances.
I did not, but I should have.
It's fine to do that. Also, if you're in the desert and you can manage to card the Chimera, you'll get a lot of AP as well. But the Chimera is pretty hard to fight. Anyway,
The missile disarming is pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
although
we run into the base, and it's actually kind of fun to take the costumes of the people in the, of, like, whoever was in the car, and they're like, all right, you're good, you can come in. They're like, ah, that was easy.
There's a great fake computer interface we have to use to, like, redirect the missiles or, like, change their accuracy.
Yeah.
You can adjust the accuracy ratio down to make them less.
Why is
accurate?
That a setting? It's just, I don't know, it costs more money to make them more accurate. So,
but we do end up successfully disarming everything, but I guess that just means that the base blows up with us inside it, and we all just pray at the end that Squall's able to complete his mission.
Yeah, pretty much, because the soldiers that we took out in the control room are eventually, like, one of them goes back up and reinitiates the launch sequence, and the missiles go off. And after beating up a big blue machine, we're led to believe that the people we left behind are there to die. And you better fucking believe I left Renoa there. Selfie, I think my party was Selfie, Renoa, and Zell. I think I left Zell to die as well. So
yeah,
Quistis and Irvine came with me to the garden.
We have, like, the exact opposite parties, I swear to God. I keep going with, like, Renoa and Zell.
Yeah, good for you. Quistis and Irvine went with me to the garden for funsies, and it is at this point that everything is going fucking nuts, tits up at Balam Garden.
Yeah, it turns out it's like in the middle of a civil war.
What? Weird. The factions are, of course, Headmaster Cid, who we're not fond of, but, like, we're not complete traitors, and some dude named Garden Master Norg, and the people with the yellow hats are on the Garden Master Norg side, and apparently some of the students. Nobody knows who the fuck this guy is. But I don't know.
this whole conflict is extremely confusing. Like, it's like we find Sid and he's like, I will stay behind while you all evacuate due to the incoming missile attack. And then Squall is like, no, I'll take charge of saving this place. And Sid is like, but Squall, why would you do that? And Squall actually rattles off a bunch of reasons why he actually kind of cares about
he starts some his monologuing, and then rather than just saying the last thought, he says maybe the third and second to last thoughts as well. So he's showing character growth. And Sid's like, all right, well, I have a plan to save the garden. And it involves going, it involves taking the elevator, which I didn't mention this on our last episode. This garden has one elevator, this entire thing. And there's like, it's an entire institution with just this one elevator. And we take it to the MD level. And then we take it, we do that, the elevator stops, so now it gets stuck in the MD level shaft, so now nobody has access to the elevator. Everyone on the second floor is trapped. Nobody can get up to their classes. Everything is fucked. And then, after we get out the bottom shaft and climb the elevator shaft down to the MD level, the elevator fucking crashes. So now no one's ever going to have an elevator again, I guess. Oh, no. Well, then, not our problem.
Then the whole garden begins transforming into a giant helicopter.
Well, oh, yeah. After an extremely lengthy, uncharted delving sequence of oil shit.
Oh, right.
Yeah, this whole thing just exists in this place when it was built for no reason. I don't know. But yeah, we chance upon a control scheme and press some buttons randomly. Everyone's like, Squall, do something. And it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Fuck you guys. And it's like, and they're like, Squall, do something. And it's like, can't literally anyone else do something? Please, like, I appreciate that you guys have faith in me, but like, anyone could press buttons at random. But I guess I'll do it. So you press some buttons at random. And the garden starts moving.
It flies.
The entire building. What did you think of this sequence?
I thought, who built these things?
Turns out it's the Shumi tribe.
Yeah, but also, like, why did, like...
Actually, no, it was Fisherman's Horizon.
Did people not know that the garden could fly? It seems like it. No. I don't know if Sid knew.
No, they didn't. They didn't know. Well, Fisherman's Horizon did.
I guess we immediately crash our big flying building directly into the ocean. Like, it's like no one knows how to pilot it, so we just drive it immediately to the ground.
Yeah, well, we almost run over Balam Town, and then everyone's like, Squall, do something. It's like, please, not this again. Please. Fine, whatever. Ah, I press random buttons, and then we crash into the ocean. And then we eventually drift into... Actually, do we drift into...
Not quite yet, because we first have to fight Gardenmaster Norg.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who, Gardenmaster Norg is...
No, actually, yeah, fight Gardenmaster Norg.
Gardenmaster Norg is a weird alien-looking dude in a giant machine who no one
has... Shumi tribe member.
Yep, who no one has ever talked about or referenced before.
But apparently he funded this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's great. And he is going to turn us in to appease the Galbadian army. And we're like, hey, actually, fuck you, die. And we kill him.
And he says a couple things. He says, one, that he put up the money to build this garden, which...
Sure, why not?
What? Oh, okay. And two, we're like, we say it doesn't belong to you, and he says, what? So it belongs to the Sid and Adea, that married couple? And we're like, I'm sorry, Sid is married to the sorceress Adea?
The person he's been trying to kill this whole time? What a plot twist. So we fight him, we draw Leviathan from him, hopefully.
Yes, got him.
That's fun. He's a good little support GF.
But, like, who is Norg?
Was Norg? He's dead now.
If Norg and Sid got together to build this garden, who built other gardens? And are seeds exclusive to this garden? Or are seeds a thing? Like what gardens are and how they operate in this world does not... I still lack a lot of information on.
Let's just let it wash over you.
Okay. We're going to have to increasingly be doing that as we go forward.
Yeah. You guys... hopefully at some point, if you're playing along or have played along, you just kind of let go and let God when it comes to the details of the story of Final Fantasy VIII, because I know we got a podcast to do and it's fun to get all up in there with the details, but you're gonna be disappointed. You're gonna be disappointed if you start looking for answers, because this game is about the journey.
So we learn a few things from Cid. He is married to Adia. They married that knowing that she was a sorceress. They started the whole garden and seed project specifically.
It's her idea.
Yeah, and then honestly, like, but the seeds weren't even meant to be mercenaries originally. Like, they became mercenaries to keep funding going, which I guess, like, they needed to keep the lights on.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Whatever. And then also we find out something about... Oh, there's stuff like some other seeds from the sorceress approach us, and they are looking for Ilone, yeah, who's the little girl from the dream world.
I call her Ilone. I think it's a silent E at the end.
Ilone, okay, yep.
Whatever. The pronunciation, I can't possibly be right on every pronunciation. Maybe I'm pronouncing Balam Garden wrong, or maybe it's Balam. I don't know. Who fucking knows?
Anyway, but Ilone is, she goes with them, but she also alludes to trying to change the past.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they go with them, and we eventually crash into Fisherman's Horizon.
Yeah, we just crash our big boat directly into them, and they are
and
super
the,
cool
the,
with it.
That one poor that get the full motion video of that one poor garden fisherman who finally gets a hook, but has to let it go, or he'll die to the fucking vehicle.
The pre-rendered animations and like the animations in general continue to be very good in this.
They're so great. Well, they're like, excellent, like, and so expressive.
They're really doing a lot with the fact that like they can't really render and display more than like 90 seconds of video maximum. So yeah, like they do a lot with a little.
Fisherman's Horizon. I was so excited for this part because I fucking love this town.
It's pretty cool.
It's cool. Why does it exist? Shut up.
What is this big satellite dish radio telescope thing
that's it's a big solar panel. That's how they power the town.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah. What else would it be?
I don't know.
The satellite dish was in Dalit.
Perhaps a receptor for something from the moon, as I were about to find out about. I don't know.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. No, it's the sun this time.
Okay.
We leave Balam Garden via the deck to go apologize to Fisherman's Horizon as official representatives of the garden, saying, sorry about that. We lost control. And Fisherman's Horizon's like, hey, whatever. That's not great.
We'll fix it
because we actually built this thing. And yeah, we knew it flew. What the fuck?
But also, you're mercenaries, and we don't like having you in town, so can you leave, like,
yeah,
quickly,
because
please?
We're pacifists. We're, like, super pacifists, and we don't want any conflict.
There's this great bit where, like, Renoa asks the mayor, why do you want us gone so bad? And Squall kind of facepalms and says to himself, like, they don't need to give us a reason. And it's like, he's right. We just crashed our ship into their village. They can kind of just be like, hey, can you leave?
Yeah, Renoa wasn't in my party at the time, but somebody, I think, I feel like... Maybe Irvine was there and he just hit on his wife. That may have been happening. I don't completely remember, but yes, whoever is in your party does say something and Squall has to say something similar to talk them down.
Anyway, there's some Galbadian soldiers here.
Conflict finds them anyway because they're looking for Ilone across the entire world. They don't know where she is. They don't know that she is on... the random seed ship.
This is one of those moments where I start to feel like I'm losing the grasp of things a bit because people just start kind of like alluding to things as if it's information we should already have, right? People are now talking multiple times about how Ilone can like change the past and like fling people's consciousnesses back in time or whatever. And I'm like, when exactly did we learn that? Or like...
Yeah.
It's just like everyone sort of like seems to be having lots of information that I'm not sure how they got.
Well, now you know.
Now I know. Ilone can send people's minds back in time, which explains the dream world stuff entirely.
Yeah, she's doing that to us. I think we did learn there was somebody that told us to it, and that's why when we run into Ilone in the library, we're like, hey, why are you doing that? Anyway, after this whole Fisherman's Horizon thing, we see the blue machine again. We beat it up, and our party members come back.
They do.
Yeah, because they somehow got in it, and then it got launched to Fisherman's Horizon. Fuck it. Who cares? They're here now.
And then Cid puts Squall in charge of everything.
Honestly, good choice. Better than Cid being like, in charge of everything. Fuck that guy.
Squall is now just the commander of the giant flying mobile garden base.
Yeah, whatever. That's what he said, I guess. And that's what I say, too.
Squall's not thrilled about this. He kind of considers quitting. He's not sure he wants to actually do this, and he really doesn't know why Cid wants to kill his wife.
That's fair enough. And also, he is still 17, so it's probably kind of a bullshit move on Cid's part. But it's like both a good move, because Cid sucks ass, but it is also exemplary of why he sucks ass that he's doing it in the first place.
Yes. But this is where we get the really cute musical performance sequence.
Yes. Oh, this fucking thing. All right. Did you... So, this This is dumb. But the party members are going to hold a party to celebrate Squall's promotion to commander in chief, and in doing so, they're also going to enlist Rinoa to help seduce him, I guess? I don't fucking know. Or to help him come out of his shell. You have 8 instruments, and 4 of them are correct, and 4 of them are incorrect. Tell me, Alex, did you get the correct instruments?
I don't think so, because it sounded like shit.
Oh, no. Yeah, I definitely know how to do it. You're supposed to play the slow kind of... Was it the slow? No, it's the fast music. It's not the jazzy version of Eyes on Me. If you play that music or anything, this sucks. All right.
I just picked like a piano and a saxophone and a guitar and a flute maybe.
Oh, yeah, no, this matters. So here's why this matters. And this is my problem with how they wrote Rinoa. Because because you have this really sweet scene with Rinoa where you're, you know, enjoying the music, if you can call it that. And she pushes you out onto the disc or the yep. solar panels. It's kind of a fun, flirty thing. And if the music is nice, Rinoa says, in their discussion, Rinoa says, hey, it's okay that you're upset, but just you should know that we all love you. There, I said it. This is our direct quote. We all love you. There, I said it. Please don't freak out. We just want to live, you know, live through this with you together. Like, that's a sweet thing. If the music's bad, she's like, what is your problem? Why do you have to be like that? Fuck you. This music sucks, and I'm a moody woman, and everything I say is dependent on my surroundings and the music around me, and I am fickle and frail and shitty.
Okay, that is interesting context.
That is awful. It's an awful decision.
It's an awful decision.
Like, what the fuck?
I got the bad version of the scene and did still kind of like it. There's a bit in here where, like, Squall does his mopey face palm he always does, and she mocks him by imitating it.
Yeah.
And then she says, hey, like, I wish you were more emotionally available. Like, you can confide in us. And Squall considers, like, hey, I'm closed off because I'm scared and nothing lasts. And if you come to rely on people, they'll always leave you. And it is the most, yeah. I think, that, like, kind of the emotional character beats in this game have been working for me so far.
And then it gets ruined because Rinoa says, what is your problem? Why do you have to be like that? What is yeah. the fuck? That's awful. Ugh. But I gave Rinoa, I'm doing my best to give Rinoa the good storyline at this point. See, I'm, like, trying to choose things where Squall is opening up and scenarios where Rinoa has an opportunity to kind of shine as a character, because it's so easy to accidentally just make her insufferable.
See, I don't know. Even in the bad version, there's a bit at the end where Squall is just like, fine, I'll ask for help more often. Okay. And she calls him out and is just like, no, like, stop avoiding this conversation. Do we have to keep doing this? And I'm like, yeah, get him, girl.
Sure. I guess she's...
I didn't see the nice version. It might be sweeter.
The nice version makes more sense. Here's the thing, though. With the nice version, Squall's kind of heel turn into actually liking her makes more sense.
That's
the
true.
Mean version, there's no way I would fall in love with her. What the fuck?
That's true.
Like, I don't know. It's a wild... This is a wild choice, and it should have just been... There's no reason that the way she behaves should be dependent on the music that's happening. There's no reason that should matter that much to her. Bad writing choice, but otherwise kind of a fun scene.
Anyway, that gets us to the end of part 3, which would have been what we covered in last week's episode.
Yeah, well, we go check on Balam City now.
Which is under occupation by the Galbadians.
Hey, turns out Galbadian Garden also can fly, and I don't know how they figured it out. Not really a question we can answer. One second. Oh, I'm running out of voice.
So they're here searching for a loan. Fujin and Raijin are here on Cypher's orders, and they're like, hey, we're friends, but boss's orders, gotta fight you. So we fight them.
After a fucking stupid long chase. Dumb. We're running around town trying to find where Raijin did.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then cooked it in mm-hmm. Zell's house. We do finally see Zell's room. It's pretty nice. It's a nice room.
Yeah. Oh,
you would have expected it to be messy and horrible, but it turns out he likes his room clean, or he's just never home. I don't know. One of the two. Hey, when I was a kid, you can't leave this Balam Garden scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't leave Balam Garden until you're done. When I was a kid, I didn't understand junctioning, so I got stuck.
Oh.
And I had to restart my game because I could not beat Fujin and Raijin. I could not get out. They were too hard. And now I just, obviously, now that I understand junctioning as a 35-year-old man, they died in like 2 hits.
I now understand junctioning as well. I feel like that's bot in my brain has been filled up with valuable knowledge.
After this, we check on Trevia Garden, the one that got blown up.
It's
missiles.
Pretty fucked up.
It's on the northern continent. Now that we have our little ship, we can start to explore the world at large. We can go to Trevia Garden. We can also go to the Shumi village if we want. But
there's a great moment here where like our cast all gets together and kind of basically you're just like, hey, what is happening?
what is this?
And isn't Irvine, this all very confusing?
This is weird. Why is everyone so weird about this? And Irvine's like, hey, guys, let me tell you a story. This is why Irvine is the best, because Irvine says there was like a stone house kind of on a beach on the southern continent that I grew up in, and there was this really nice woman, and her name she went by Matron, and then slowly and surely all the party members are like, wait, I remember a Matron, I remember a stone house with a beach on it, and Irvine's like, yeah, shut up, let me keep talking. There was a really nice boy who kind of felt left out sometimes, but there was this one girl that was really nice to him, and her name, and she was like, what's her name? And Selfie's like, what's her name? Selfie? Basically. And over the course of this moment, Irvine starts to rally everyone, says, hey, we're kind of feeling down about this Trevia Garden stuff, but like, You guys are my long time friends, and like you guys have always given me purpose, and I didn't write down exactly what he said. You probably have notes about this, but I really love this monologue Irvine has about bringing everyone together and accomplishing something, even though like what we're doing is we're basically set out to go kill our mom, our adoptive orphan Matron, because Adia was the woman, right?
Yes.
Was in charge of the orphanage. Yes. It turns out she's kind of everyone's de facto mother.
Yes, the sorceress Adia was also the one who ran the orphanage that we all apparently grew up in and forgot about, because it turns out that when you junction GFs, they cause you to lose memories.
And that is something that is explained to you if you went and bothered and looked through your desk and all of the reading material in Timbermaniacs. Have you picked up the Timbermaniacs and reading them?
I did, but I didn't catch this bit. Well, it's very funny the way that like they're like, GFs take over a part of our brain, just like the rumor spread by GF critics. And I'm like, there are GF critics out there, folks on the message boards being GFs, man.
Yeah, they are. They're on the message boards in Garden. They're like, this is weird, right? This is weird and bad. And everyone's forgetting their childhoods.
Okay. So I want to talk about this orphanage twist reveal thing here.
Please do. It's a big deal.
The big twist reveal, right, is that all the characters actually, were childhood friends. Yeah. This is probably my least favorite story decision in the game so far. I'm coming back around towards the end. Like, the game is getting me back in. I'm going to go into the final act here. But, like, okay, I was joking early on when I said this game was to blame for Kingdom Hearts. But this is Kingdom Hearts shit.
It totally is. But it's also, like, it is so unfeasible that these characters, all of them forgot everything all the time and didn't have any sort of like subconscious be like, you're familiar. Well, there's no moment like that, and that's why Irvine is great, because he's the only semi-fucking reasonable functioning adult like person in this group of people who's like, hey, you guys know it's weird that we're all childhood friends and nobody remembers and nobody said a single thing, right? Final Fantasy does this all the time, where it's just this like long list of contrivances that would all be completely undone were there to be one character that's like, hey, you know, this is weird, right? That's why I love Irvine, because he's the only one that's like, this is weird in the entire franchise, and it like sets things in motion.
I mean, it's just like, it makes all the characters way less interesting. They don't get to be six people with different histories and backgrounds. Now they all just have the same shared story.
It kind of feels like they are this six-person unit that is sort of this amorphous blob, and now after this point, there are very few moments where characters get their own sort of moment to shine or their personal arc.
Well, and now a bunch of stuff like emotionally is going to hinge on the relationship that our characters have to this Matron figure. And it's like, I've spent no time with her. I don't have a relationship with the Matron figure. You're introducing her, like dropping her into the middle of this and then telling us that the characters care about her. And it's like, okay, can we get some demonstration of that?
Well, eventually we do. Thankfully, that does happen. Not yet. But it does at some point happen. next, because the very next thing we do, once we do, is try and go assassinate her again.
We
hey, do. Weird, a second assassination attempt. funny how that keeps mirroring real life.
This is where we run into the other enemy garden.
Because we're about to go visit her, but turns out so is the other enemy garden, and we start to have a fight.
So our school mobilizes. Their school, in one of the sickest things I have ever seen in a video game, launches motorcycles off of ramps through midair.
And then the green soldiers are in the garden, and there's a huge kind of scuffle. We're on the back foot, basically, because these are trained professional army soldiers, and we are 17-year-olds at best.
There's a very cool thing happening here, where in a few shots, they have a pre-rendered animation playing in kind of like the background layer, while you're able to run around in the foreground layer in a way that looks pretty seamless.
Yeah, like, well, that's after, of course, on the quad, Rinoa gets knocked on the side.
Yeah.
And she gets knocked off the side because, of course, she does. She is the damsel of this game and is not allowed to be cool in any way, except... Now that we're running around, we run around forever after, of course. Oh, by the way, we skip. This is more important, right? Because we shouldn't skip this. Zell gets Squall's ring off of Squall and then gives it to Rinoa.
Because she's asking for it. Because Squall cares about the ring and Rinoa cares about Squall, so she wants the ring.
She wants the ring and she wants to make a copy of it for symbolic reasons, whatever. Anyway, so now she has Squall's ring and is dangling off the side of the torn garden. And let me tell you, she's dangling there for quite some time.
She is.
The grip strength on this woman? Hey, now I'm on board with saving her.
She's run around inside for a fair amount of time.
She's got forearms for days, I guess. So we're running around trying to save her, find a ladder or something. Eventually, Squall gets tackled by an aerial mobile unit that comes in from the side. And you have this impromptu rock, paper, scissors duel thing that I died to a couple times because it's bullshit.
This sequence is
but
so
then the game
cool
explains
in theory.
That if you block a bunch and then you just do the death blow, it like dies in two hits.
Like the sequence where you're both hanging off a ladder from like his air suit as you fly through the air with like the battle happening.
It's cool the first
you.
Time, and then by the third time when you like eventually get it dead in like two hits, and then you're just like slowly watching the rest of the battle happen while the soldier's there, and it's kind of awkward instead. You're like, oh, this didn't execute very well.
There's a bit in here also where Squall gives an inspiring speech to the school, but like what he says is basically like, Seed was created to fight the sorceress, or that's what I'm told, and now it's time to do it. And I'm like, Squall, do you know why you're doing what you're doing? Does it bother you that you don't know why you're doing what you're doing?
No, that's Squall's thing, right? He's always been, he's not like Cypher, where Cypher is like, this is stupid. I'm going to do what I think is actually right. Squall has always just followed orders and not had to care about anything, get emotionally invested. And now he's just like thrust in a leadership position.
Anyway, eventually both of our gardens hit the ground and we infiltrate their garden. And so we're now running back through like
through the hockey player.
Through the hockey. Yeah, it's so great. The first time the encounter comes up, and it's like there's just hockey players in the
and they're
hockey.
Like, huh, two in formation. Like, what the fuck is this fantasy high bullshit? Oh my god. That's they did anyway. Yeah, there's a whole car key puzzle.
We get Cerberus.
You fight Cerberus.
Squall says, "Do they know how GFs work here?" Which just raises more questions. Like, wait, do other gardens not use GFs? Is it
no?
Just
Irvine
ours?
Irvine was in Galvania Garden and he didn't use GFs.
Is it just us?
It's just us.
Why?
Because the other gardens are like, that's fucked up that you're putting God and gods and children's brains and making them forget their childhood. We don't need that. We have guns. But turns out junctioning is pretty OP. Anyway, yeah, no, they don't. That's why Irvine remembered all of the childhood and the other people didn't. And also Rinoa remembers her childhood, but she didn't grow up with everyone. It's contrived. Anyway, yes, we make our way up to Cypher and Edea and make, I'm assuming, quick work of them.
Yeah, pretty easy.
You get to draw Alexander. That's fun. Alexander's in this game.
Yeah, Guardian Force Alexander.
Woohoo! He's great. He has what, elemental defense times 4? Fucking that rules.
Mm-hmm. It's that handy.
That shit's great. This so the end of disc 2. What a sequence of events. Would you mind describing what happens after we kick the shit out of our mom?
Well, we defeat her. And then there's a white flash of some sort, and then Rinoa staggers forward and helps Cypher up.
Yeah.
And then the sorceress we just defeated starts addressing all of us by name and says, "You've all grown so much and become so strong. I have waited for this day to come and feared for this day to come. Is it a joyous day or an odious day?
Yeah.
Where is Alone? Have I protected Alone?"
Yeah. I was listening, but did you say that she helped Cypher up?
Yeah, I saw that she helped Cypher up.
Yeah, she helped Cypher up, whispered something in his ear, and he's like,
yep.
All right.
Which I was curious about that. I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, we'll see.
And then I wake up back in bed, and Renault is laid out unconscious in the hospital.
And that is the end of disc two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
We covered that not too bad. That was pretty quick.
Yeah. That was... We did a good job, I think. Let us know. Let us know on our socials or Discord in particular. You can join our Discord in the link in the description of the episode. That's where all our socials are. Discord's great. And speaking of Discord, next week we are going to talk solely about the rest of Final Fantasy VIII. There's still a lot of it.
I'm looking at my notes right now.
But we are going to have what's our regular, you know, user interactive segment, our Charlian Forum. I'm going to ask you guys what you think about Final Fantasy VIII. How does it rank in your total placements of all Final Fantasies, if you played a lot or not? I don't know. Have you been playing along? What do you think? What's your opinion? Who do you like? Who do you not like?
Tell us your least favorite characters and absolutely. Why it's Wedge.
Oh, man. No, poor Wedge. he's just along for the ride every so often.
No, actually, there's a really good Biggs and Wedge moment later on in Disc 5.
Disc 5? Oh, God, it's getting
Disc 4.
Yeah, it's excellent. So that's look forward to that. We're going to have our male goblin's going to come back for our Charlene Forum segment, as is his job. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm still enjoying this game. You know, as I play this game, I'm like, you know, this story is batshit and driven by thoughts and feelings and not logic. But the game is still fun and silly and easy, even if there are a couple parts that are like, all right, I'm just running around in circles in this stupid prison now for 18 million years. Thank gosh. So it's like... It's great that the remaster just has the speed up.
It's really handy.
Oh my God. I'm turning like for, at first I was like, am I going to use these? And I'm like, oh my God, I can't not use them.
Oh, and like, also like, this is kind of the story low point for me as we're getting into the next section. There's stuff in there that is working more for me that I find more interesting as it kind of starts to cohere a little bit again. I just, man, the orphanage thing is dumb.
It's really stupid and really contrived. And again, yeah, it does take out a lot of the individuality of the characters. And there's just not, again, not too much in terms of, after this, there's not too much in terms of individual arcs apart from Renoa and Squall. It just kind of turns into the Renoa and Squall times 5 show.
Yes.
Which is, you know, fine. The better story arc is, again, it's Laguna. Like, it's...
Oh my God, the Laguna reveal that's coming up.
We'll talk about it then.
I cannot wait to talk about that.
So we'll see you next Sunday to talk about that. I don't think I have anything else I want to mention. Hopefully my voice will stop giving out.
Have we decided on our theme for next month yet? Oh, can we let people know what it is?
Oh, yeah. But, and we'll also talk about, that's true. We'll also talk about what games we're going to play for October. That'll be also really, really fun. It'll be a fun episode, probably another big one. But until that episode, you know, class is dismissed. I have been your host of light, teacher of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I was joined by, of course, none other than my co-host of light, Alexander Hambrock. Say, I don't know, tell us what we're having for lunch today.
We're having pizza sticks, but not the good ones, the kind of gross ones where the sauce tastes like pasta sauce.
Oh, man. They're just reusing the pasta sauce.
Oh, wait.
Damn it. It's like the meaty sauce. That's
yeah,
just like,
it's
oh,
not.
Gross.
It's not good.
Oh, well.
You get excited because you hear pizza sticks and you get there and it's like, oh, fuck, it's these pizza sticks.
God. I think my favorite was French toast sticks.
French toast sticks were good.
That was good. It was like French toast for lunch? That's wild. Oh, well. Bye.